So I'm presenting on behalf of several people who I want to start off by acknowledging. Suraday Shah, Josh Reimer, and Craig Ross at Winnipeg Regional Health Authority, and David Fisman and Sharmista Mishra at University of Toronto. So as has been observed in pretty much every urban center in North America, the Canadian city of Winnipeg has experienced a resurgence of syphilis in recent years, and the epidemic has been focused in men who have sex with men. Mathematical modeling studies suggest that frequent screening of at-risk men may be effective for controlling outbreaks. However, we need to think about resource use when we think about screening. So translating a mathematical modeling study to a real-life intervention is challenging. The resources required to increase screening are not insignificant, and we want to think about how we can maximize impact in a way that's not only efficient but also sustainable. And the critical question really becomes, how do we identify those men who are most at risk? So in the city of Winnipeg in 2015, reinfections accounted for approximately 9% of syphilis diagnoses. And the people at the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority actually approached us because they were curious about implementing an intervention that used previous infection history as a marker of risk in a targeted screening intervention. So in 2015, they began implementing this intervention in the population, and they asked us in parallel to develop a mathematical model in order to get a sense of what they might expect to see, as well as they also asked us to look at a comparison of this approach with other possible interventions. So basically they wanted to know if this was a good use of resources in their setting. So to do this, we developed a deterministic compartmental model. We essentially modified an existing model so that it reproduced the epidemiologic and demographic characteristics of the outbreak that was occurring amongst MSM in Winnipeg. So just to walk you through this briefly, men could become infected following sexual contact with an infectious individual. We assume that the primary and secondary stages of infection were infectious. In the absence of treatment, men went through incubating, primary, secondary, early latent, and late latent syphilis. With treatment, they returned to the susceptible state. And we further stratified this model by infection history. So once you had been treated for a first syphilis infection, with some probability you could enter this previously treated state. And you went through the same series of transitions as in the bottom part of the model, but we separated these men out so that we could apply interventions specifically to that portion of the population. The model was also risk stratified, so we included three levels of sexual risk, denoted here as high, intermediate, and low, with a proportion of the population allocated to each of these compartments. And these risk groups were defined by the relative rate of partner acquisition. So men in the highest sexual activity group had a 20-fold higher rate of partner change per year compared to our lowest activity group. And we also had a parameter that described mixing between these groups. And so this could range from proportionate or essentially random selection of partners from the population to highly assortative or like with like mixing. So men from the highest activity group preferentially choosing partners who also had high rates of partner change. And we parameterized this model with data from Winnipeg, wherever we had that available, and otherwise with literature-derived data. And we used surveillance data from Winnipeg on diagnoses of primary, secondary, early latent, and infectious neurosyphilis, which I'll refer to throughout this presentation as early syphilis, in men, as well as some seroprevalence data from the region for model fitting. So we started off by defining a base case. So this was our best estimate of what we think is currently happening amongst MSM in Winnipeg in terms of screening. So we assumed that 30% of the population of MSM in Winnipeg are being screened annually. Our main intervention of interest was enhanced screening in men with a previous history of infection. So on top of 30% of infection-naive men being screened annually, we assumed that 75% of men with a previous infection were screened every 3 months. So we had two other interventions that we compared. And just I want to point out that what we did for these other two interventions to make these comparisons fair is we calculated the number of extra tests that we would perform each year in intervention A and redistributed them in different ways. So for intervention B, we redistributed those extra tests uniformly across the population without any consideration of risk factors. And then in intervention C, we took those extra tests that we were using in intervention A and applying to men with a previous infection, and using those tests in men in the highest risk strata of our model. So any difference that we saw between those interventions was really just due to differential targeting of tests. So this is a summary of what the model outputs look like. On the left is showing projected prevalence of early syphilis, and on the right is showing diagnosed early syphilis cases. So this is what would be picked up by surveillance. The vertical dashed line shows the start of the intervention period, and so the gray line shows what we would expect to happen based on 5 years of data from Winnipeg up until 2015 if we were to continue with our base case assumption of 30% of the population being screened every year. And the green line shows what we would expect to happen if we were to increase screening in MSM with a prior infection. So 75% of men screened every 3 months. For comparison's sake, this is what we would expect to happen if we were to distribute those tests uniformly across the population. And finally, in red is showing what would happen if instead we applied those tests to men with the highest rate of partner change. And I will note that on the diagnosed cases, you may have noticed that for all of the interventions, we have this initial uptick in cases that are diagnosed, and that basically represents the fact that as we increase screening in the population, we're finding and treating more cases. And so that's a very transient increase that you would expect to see as you have a more intense intervention in a population. So we looked at different frequencies of screening in the population. So what I showed you before was every 3 months. And we also looked at screening either annually or semi-annually. And so what this slide shows is the relative impact of these different interventions. So we're comparing either the proportionate reduction in incident cases as the blue boxes, or the red circles are showing the reduction in prevalence relative to the base case with each of these interventions. And really the message, so higher proportion is good. It means that you're having a larger impact in terms of reducing disease burden in the population. And really what I would like you to notice is that as we reduce the frequency of screening in the population, the impact of all of the interventions is reduced. But we also see that the relative attractiveness of targeted screening in men with a prior infection actually increases relative to the impact of targeting men with the highest rates of partner change. So another analysis that our colleagues were interested in was this idea of what happens if we have an intervention that we apply quite intensely in the population, but we relax it after a couple years. So the first vertical line shows the start of an intervention period. The second dashed line indicates a two-year period where we change the frequency of screening in our men with a prior infection. So the blue line shows what happens if we continue screening every 3 months, and then in red is showing reducing after this two-year period to screening these men only every 6 months. In green shows what happens if we reduce to annual screening. And purple shows what would happen if we were to return to our base case screening. So basically, no more focused screening in men with a prior history of infection, and just return to what we had at the beginning, or what we think, just return to approximately 30% of the population screened each year, regardless of their risk. And so over the 10-year time horizon that we considered in our analysis, it shows that even if you are relaxing your intervention after a period of time, you still are expected to have a fairly significant impact on disease burden. So to summarize, using our mathematical model, we suggest that focused screening in MSM with a prior syphilis infection should be an impactful intervention, and the experience of the people at the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority have shown that it's actually a readily actionable intervention. Using a clinical history of syphilis infection as a risk marker means that public health teams can deliver the screening strategy and support providers accordingly. And so an advantage of this is that there's less reliance on patient-provider interactions to identify at-risk individuals. So we're moving beyond a focus on behaviors to identify men vulnerable to STI acquisition. And I think this really goes back to the opening plenary session, this idea of networks and the fact that asking an individual about their behaviors doesn't really get at the role or their position within a network, and something like repeat infections really does. And as I mentioned, this intervention began in 2015, and they are continuing to monitor it, and there is a program evaluation to come, so stay tuned. And thank you.
Okay, questions?
Ned Hook again, UAB. Very nice, Ashley. I guess it's two questions. The first is, your figure of 9% of patients with who've had syphilis before is on the low end of, I think, the published data. So I was wondering what happened to your model. I think many communities find that 15 or even 20% of patients have had syphilis before. So I was wondering how that might have affected the outcomes. The second question I had for you had to do with your time parameter for having had syphilis before. Was that syphilis at any time, or was there a time element regarding that? And does the periodicity with which people are getting recurrent syphilis make a difference?
Okay, excellent question. I'll answer the first one. The second answer, second question first, is we considered a five-year time period backwards. So having had a previous infection in the past 5 years. In terms of the first question, I actually don't have an answer for you because we really were focused on looking at the situation in Winnipeg, but it's an excellent question and something that we can definitely look at. Yeah.
Julie, can you just repeat my question? I don't have to call Roxanne Crony from the University of Washington. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you took HIV status into account in the model, particularly given that men who are in HIV
So the question was just whether or not the model took into account HIV status of the men in the model, cases.
Yeah. No, we didn't. There was absolutely no stratification by HIV status.
Hi, Bob Cohn from San Francisco. Quick question. Did your model assume it was a closed system, or did it assume people were entering and exiting Winnipeg bringing syphilis with them?
It was a closed system.
Mm-hmm. Not really a realistic assumption then, right?
No.
Okay.
You know, I have one question.
Yeah.
And I may have missed it in the beginning because I was writing down some thoughts, but what are the actual numbers of cases in Winnipeg that we're talking about here?
Like, so it's not huge numbers. It's 100, 150 a year.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's also a smaller public health unit, so, I mean, it is something that I was thinking about in terms of scale up, and you know, if you have 1,000 cases a year, if you could do something like that. But I mean,
okay, if it's resources for a small place.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks.